You can listen to all episodes of Leonard ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
You know, the law enforcement agencies of the United States government are trained to use deadly force, and they certainly attempted to shoot and kill us when we were defending our treaty rights. We made a stand there in Wounded Knee, South Dakota, February 27, 1973. I was there right from the beginning, right from the first night till right at the end.
This is Lenny Foster, Leonard Peltier's spiritual advisor. For nearly four decades, Lenny has leveraged the power of indigenous ceremonial practices to touch the lives of thousands of incarcerated Native Americans as part of the Navajo Nation's Corrections Project.
When it was time to stand down and have a surrender, Lou Bean and Gladys Bissonnette and Ellen Muskamp, the elder women, said that Dennis Banks should not be made to surrender because the government forces would cause a fight to shoot Dennis Banks. It was decided that he should escape. He was asked to make a plan to have some Indian boys lead him out. When they asked, who would you ask to lead you out of here? I guess through the whole 71 days, he was looking at all the Indian boys, the warriors. And he said, I want Lenny Foster, Dene, Navajo, to lead me out of here.
You're listening to Leonard, a podcast series about Leonard Peltier, one of the longest-serving political prisoners in American history. I'm Rory Owen Delaney.
And I'm Andrew Fuller. We've spent the last 3 years working to share Leonard's story with a new generation of people. Who he is, how he ended up behind bars, and why we believe he deserves to go free. This is Season 2, Episode 2, The Great Escape.
In recognition of the 48th anniversary of the end of Wounded Knee, Lenny Foster shares the incredible story of how he snuck AIM leader Dennis Banks out across government lines 2 days before the federal stand down on May 8, 1973.
Wounded Knee was a place where many indigenous, different tribes, different Indian nations came together and shared in the prayers and shared in the experience of surviving. We had all the leaders there at the beginning. It was Dennis Banks, Russell Means, Carter Camp, Clyde Balcourt, Pedro Bissonnette. They were all there. Crow Dog was the medicine man. Wallace Black Elk was also one of the spiritual leaders. That was perhaps one of the most beautiful experiences our people had, but it was also a very serious and deadly experience. I survived 11 firefights. On one occasion, I almost got hit in the head. That was a reminder just how serious Indian rights, human rights for indigenous people is. Sometimes we end up giving up our lives for that cause, for the treaty rights. I was there when Frank Clearwater was shot, killed. I was there when Buddy Lamont was assassinated, was shot, and he died that afternoon. I'm sure there will be other Wounded Knees in the future, but Wounded Knee 1973, that was my experience, and I survived and lived to tell about it. You know, Dennis Banks was a gifted orator. He was a blessed leader chosen by the Great Spirit. He was the founder of this movement, indigenous rights movement throughout the Western Hemisphere. And when we all were together in Wounded Knee, I served as a warrior, as a dog soldier in the Little Bighorn Bunker. We had John Carlson, David Wilson, Dick Lagarde with the Minneapolis St. Paul AIM. Kirstie Casper and myself were from Denver AIM. So we all defended that land there in that area and engaged in these firefights. They shot tear gas canisters at us. They shot flares. So they had heavy firepower. Then right at the end, after Buddy Lamont was shot and killed, our chiefs, Kills Enemy and Fool's Crow, they called for a ceasefire. They didn't want any more Indian boys being shot and killed, so they called a ceasefire. And we buried Buddy Lamont there in Wounded Knee. When it was time to stand down and have a surrender, Dennis Banks sent Henry Wawasik to the bunker and asked, where's Lenny Foster? And he says, right here. I said, I'm right here. He said, DJ wants to see you. He wants to talk to you. And I said, me? How come he wants to see me? Well, you better get over there right away. He wants to talk to you. And I thought, what did I do? Did I do something wrong or something? And being called into the command post to talk to the co-founder of the American Indian Movement. So they called me to the log cabin house where he was in. And the women, they decided that DJ shouldn't be surrendering. So they decided that some of the warriors should take him out, walk him out through the night. So when they asked me, I can't say no. So I had a real serious obligation, a commitment, was to ensure that I would walk point. I said, yeah, okay, I'll do it. And then I said to Crow Dog and Black Oak, they were sitting there, can we have a sweat lodge ceremony? Smoke the pipe. Prepare. He said, okay. So we had a sweat lodge ceremony, cleansing and purification. We smoked us down with a cedar, white sage, sweet grass. We smoked the chinupa, the pipe, and prayed about it. Crow Dog said he'll use a crazy horse's prayers to make us invisible. It was on May the 6th. I think that was a Tuesday. And there was five of us. It was Dennis Banks, Henry Owasik, Percy Casper, Frank Black Horse, and myself. And we left. That would have been May the 7th. The stand down was the 8th on a Thursday. That was the surrender date. So we left the night before.
After the break, the Great Escape.
Hey, this is Rory. If you want to be the first to hear about new episodes or the new show we're working on, go to mbdfilms.com/contact and subscribe to our newsletter. To help Leonard, you can purchase his artwork at whoisleonardpeltier.info. All proceeds go to fund his legal defense. So check out his stuff. He's incredibly talented.
You can also help Leonard on social media by tweeting messages of support for Leonard's clemency to @POTUS, @JoeBiden, and @FLOTUS, @DrBiden, as well as to Kamala Harris, Secretary Deb Haaland, and the Justice Department. So tweet, tweet, tweet. Let's keep Leonard in their timelines and mentions.
Once the sun went down, it was dark, pitch black. And it was an 11-mile hike out of there, over rough terrain, gullies and ravines. But as I was walking maybe 3 miles into the hike, once we got past the creek, we encountered an open area, but there was a tree line off in the distance. And I said, let's don't bunch up, single file, no talking. I'll walk point, go up ahead, make sure there's no ambush, make sure there's no tripwire, make sure there's no fids. I got to a certain tree line, there was an owl. I didn't know what it was, it scared me. It was an owl, a big owl sitting up in that tree, hooting. In our Dene beliefs, our Navajo beliefs, you encounter an owl at night, bringing you a message. Not a good message. message that something is in your path and that's not good. I knew that because of my traditional upbringing. I was taught those ways. Then I went back and I said, come on, let's go. We're clear. So we made it. Then we kept going. And then I encountered that owl again. This time I asked, but Elans and but Elibe said, what do you want? What are you telling me? That's what I said in my Dene language to the owl. And he took off. He went towards the east direction. And we were going north, and it's 11 miles from Wounded Knee to Porcupine. Once we get to Porcupine, we're in freedom. So we had maybe 6 miles left. But that owl went towards the east, and then when I followed it, I said, there's a reason why it's going that way. He said, it's taking me to a safe place. Then I realized there's a road. The road was right there. Paved road. The highway that went from Wounded Knee to Porcupine. There was nothing, no one. So I just ran back maybe 100 yards, and they were waiting for me right there under a tree. I said, come on, let's go, we're clear. But we're going to go this way. The highway's right there. And I told them, no, we're safe, we're safe. As long as we walk on the shoulders and it's close to the tree line, and if there's any traffic or lights, we can see it coming. We didn't encounter nothing. No traffic, nothing. It was still dark. It might have been like 4:30 in the morning. We were walking along the shoulders of the road, and we got close, about a mile, mile and a half from Porcupine. There was a flat area, a hill, and there was a car running. So I said, let me go check. I'm going to sneak around from behind. I stayed within the tree line, so they couldn't see me. And I snuck around from behind the car. I looked in there. There were two feds sitting there. As I proceeded to go back towards where the group was waiting, Black Horse was the one that he ran across the road. They saw him. And I said, oh, man, they saw him. They're going to come. So I said, come on, let's go. Let's get out of here. We had to run back across the paved road, the highway. We went back to the west. And there was a ravine. There was a hill lag. And we were able to start running up that ravine to get away. They had a dog with them. German Shepherd dog. You could hear it. But they had him on a leash. My first thought was, if they let that dog loose, it's going to come towards us. It's going to smell us. So we got to get out of here. I told DJ just to run up along that ravine and we'll catch up with you. We're going to hold up the rear. My responsibility was protect him. And for me, it was the best way was to protect the rear, to stay right where we're at in case they started to follow us. I told him to take off, so he did. And out of nowhere, these couple of reservation dogs came out of nowhere, and right there they got a big old dog fight. They never saw us. They never saw us. So we got away. We got further, maybe a mile and a half, and they left, or they took their dog with them. The dog that came to our rescue, I don't know where they disappeared to. The spirit sent them. First of all, the spirit sent that owl to give that message. Beware. That was the message. We got away. We went to this house. Percy Casper went to this house. They knew him. So John Attackham was the family. They led us into that house. He went further up to another house, and Dennis Banks was there. So the next day, May the 8th, Thursday, they had to stand down on Wounded Knee, but we were in Porcupine, 11 miles away. We were completely free. So we waited until the sun went down. John Attackham took us in his car. We all got together, and we drove to Crow Dog's Paradise, which was probably 80 miles, 85 miles. That's quite a ways. So we drove over there and got away. There was a big camp. We were free. And that Friday morning, we had breakfast, and DJ asked me where I was going. I told him I'm going to go to Denver, then from Denver, I'm going to make it back down to Navajo land, Fort Defiance, Arizona. We all went our separate ways. I call that the Great Escape. But it was pretty intense, the fact that I was able to lead Dennis Banks out of there. He could have chose anybody, but he chose me to do that. The only way I could do that was by using the swell-out ceremony to pray. That was part of my traditional upbringing beliefs, because I grew up in Navajo Diné sheep camp. So the gifts that I received from my father and my mother and grandparents, my auntie, my uncle, they're all traditional Diné, was to pray. And that's how I utilized that teaching to escape, help Dennis Banks escape. And he was always forever grateful for it. Anytime I saw him, he would always mention that to me. And he thanked me that being a Diné and being loyal to him, just those words that he said to me has always been a gift. I always remember that.
This season on Leonard.
The FBI were going all over. Sometimes they had a search warrant. Most of the time they didn't. There's helicopters landing at Edgar Bear Runner's house.
15 FBI agents flooded the house, came in, shotguns, AR-15, 16, just to arrest me. They said, throw him off the bridge right here.
One of those FBI agents said, you know, Yellow Hair, we owe you one more. Who is this one that they're talking about? We're talking about Leonard Peltier as a sacrificial lamb to a monumental cover-up by the FBI.
So their whole case is all built on lies. I mean, it's just, they never stopped. And even now, you know, why is he in there so long? Really? Doesn't anybody care that they lied? Doesn't Canada care that they lied to them to get Peltier even in the United States, where he knew he would not have a fair trial?
What Leonard Peltier's case has always symbolized to me is that it's a perfect example of how the government can target someone for political purposes, set out to fabricate the evidence against them to obtain a conviction, suppress the evidence of that fabrication. And if even you can find that evidence of the fabrication, nobody cares. So it allows for the criminal justice system to be simply a tool of the domestic security apparatus of the United States, of which Leonard is a victim.
This podcast was produced, written, and directed on Tongva land by Rory Owen Delaney and Andrew Fuller. Kevin McKiernan serves as our consulting producer.
Thanks to Bobby Halverson for the original music we're using throughout this series. And thanks to Mike Casentini at the Network Studios for his engineering assistance. And to Peter Lauridsen and Sycamore Sound for their audio mixing. Thanks to Lenny Foster for sharing his stories and wisdom. Thanks to everyone at the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee.
And thanks, most of all, to Leonard Peltier. To get involved and help Leonard, sign the new clemency petition at freeleonardpeltier.com. For more information, go to whoisleonardpeltier.info or find us on social media at Leonard_pod on Twitter and Instagram, or facebook.com/Leonard Podcast. This podcast is a production of Man Bites Dog Films, LLC. Free Leonard Peltier.